enjoy it.
Not suffering to upbraid you.
Not suffering to upbraid you.
Yam Bhagavat the Sevaya.
Yam Bhagavat the Sevaya.
Bhagavat Yutama Sloke.
Bhagavat Yutama Sloke.
Bhaktir Bhavati Naishiki.
Bhaktir Bhavati Naishiki.
Before reciting this Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead Narayan, unto Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author, and Srila Prabhupada, the translator and commentator. By regular attendance and classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering service unto the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart of all is completely destroyed. A loving service unto the personality of God, in whose praise, with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. So we're reading today from First Canto, chapter 18, which is entitled The Parikshit Cursed by a Brahmin Boy. We're just in the beginning of the chapter. We're on text number 5. And because it's the beginning of the chapter, it hasn't really got into this story of Maharaj Parikshit being cursed just yet, but it's about to, but not today. It's actually reviewing points from the previous chapter. Okay, we're on text 5. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master very kindly forced open my eyes to the torchlight of knowledge. I am eternally indebted to him for that mercy and beg for service life after life. Okay, text number 5. Tava kalerna prabhavet.
Tava kalerna prabhavet.
Ravisho piha sarvata.
Ravisho piha sarvata.
Yavat isho mahan urvyam.
Yavat isho mahan urvyam.
Abhimanyava ekarat.
Abhimanyava ekarat.
Tavat kalak kaler na prabhavet.
Tavat kaler na prabhavet.
Ravisho piha sarvata.
Ravisho piha sarvata.
Yavat isho mahan urvyan.
Yavat isho mahan urvyan.
Abhimanyava ekarat.
Abhimanyava ekarat.
Tavat kalarna prabhavat.
Tavat kalarna prabhavat.
Ravisho piha sarvata.
Ravisho piha sarvata.
Yavat isho mahan urvyan.
Yavat isho mahan urvyan.
Abhimanyava ekarat. Yabadisha Mahan Urvyam.
Abhimanyava Ekarat. Abhiman Yaba Ekarat.
Which are you on 10?
Tabat Kalina Prabhupada.
Tabat Kalina Prabhupada.
Rabishto Viha Sarvata.
Rabishto Viha Sarvata.
Rabarisho Mahan Urbyam.
Rabarisho Mahan Urbyam.
Tabat,
so long.
Kali,
the personality of Kali.
Na,
cannot.
Prabhavet,
flourish.
Travisha,
entered in.
Api,
even though.
Iha,
here.
Sarvata,
everywhere.
Yavat,
as long as.
Isha,
the Lord.
Mahan,
great.
Urvyan,
powerful.
Abhimanyava,
the son of Abhimanyu.
Ekarat,
one emperor.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada.
Jai Prabhupada.
As long as the great, powerful son of Abhimanyu remains the emperor of the world, there is no chance that the personality of Kali will flourish. One more time. As long as the great, powerful son of Abhimanyu remains the emperor of the world, there is no chance that the personality of Kali will flourish. Purport. As we have already explained, the personality of Kali had entered into the jurisdiction of this earth long ago, and he was looking for an opportunity to spread his influence all over the world. But he could not do so satisfactorily due to the presence of Maharaj Parikshit. That is the way of good government. The disturbing elements, like the personality of Kali, will always try to extend their nefarious activities. But it is the duty of the able state to check them by all means. Although Maharaj Parikshit allotted places for the personality of Kali, at the same time he gave no chance for the citizens to be swayed by the personality of Kali. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Maharaj Parikshit. So, here we are continuing, or as I was saying, we're getting introduced to this part of the story where the description of the curse of Maharaj Parikshit is going to happen. But as an introductory note, Sutta Goswami is describing some background information. So the previous chapter was entitled Punishment and Reward of Kali. The Punishment and Reward of Kali. How that Maharaj Parikshit, the great powerful son of Abhimanyu, on his traveling throughout his kingdom to see that good government is established, that the people are following religious principles, that there's no disturbance in the state, he was diligently trying to be aware of the state of the consciousness of the citizens, to see if they needed protection in this area, to see if there's needs in this area, to see if there's unruly personalities, upstarts here. So he wanted to get firsthand information. Although, as the strong leader of the world, he did have his agents that informed him of this and that, what's happening in the kingdom. But still, on the sense of duty and the sense of traveling throughout his kingdom, get first-hand advice. We see similar, a little different, but we see similar activities of previous kings also mentioned in the scriptures, even including Krishna. Sometimes Krishna would disguise himself as somebody, disguise himself, and then just go about among the kingdom to hear what people were saying. Lord Ram did this also. Lord Ram did that also. He disguised himself because oftentimes the unfortunate nature of people is we like to complain behind somebody's back. and not to their face, not to address it so that it could be rectified, but somehow or other complain behind the back. But, and that when the person isn't particularly present, one feels more free to express their opinion, especially if it's a negative one. Anyway, so Lord Ram, understanding the delicacy of his situation and Sita's situation, etc., etc., one night did that in the sky. He went amongst his citizens and heard somebody complaining about the character of Sita, although it was flawless and it had been demonstrated. This is the nature of people, us, me, that we find fault even when there's no fault to be found. Anyway, so Maharaj Sarikit, traveling out throughout his kingdom, coming across the bull and the cow being beaten and tortured by a person who was dressed as a king, but didn't have kingly qualities. And this is exactly, in one sense, exactly what Maharaj Sarikit was looking for. People who are in positions of leadership, perhaps, whatever influence, but not meeting the standards, the proper standards, the proper qualities of a person of influence. Because what our qualities are very influential to people that we come in contact with. Directly, indirectly, that also happens. Just like Srila Prabhupada would often encourage, Srila Prabhupada would often tell his devotees to go out with pride dressed as a devotee. He never said it like that, but the idea was, as Westerners newly converted to Krishna consciousness, and this not being our normal type of dress, oftentimes there's a little hesitancy to appear like this in public, because the whole tide of civilization is going in a whole different direction. And it makes a statement, even without verbalizing it. Anyway, people are influenced. Oftentimes you go out and you're sorry, you're dressed, and you're, oh, I like your dress. Anyway, not to get distracted here, sorry, bring my mind back here. So when he saw this personality who was beating the cow and the bull in a lonely place, he could immediately understand, although this person has the dress or the appearance of a leader, he doesn't have any of the qualities of a leader, and therefore he should be chastised. Not only chastised, but Maharaj Brigitte was ready to kill him. But interestingly enough, someone might wonder, why didn't he kill him? Why didn't he kill Kali right then when he saw him acting in such a horrific manner? One of the verses explains that Maharaj Pariksit was a realist. He was a realist, and he understood that, and he understood the degradation of the age of Kali, but he also understood the benefit of the age of Kali. There's this particular benefit that even makes the demigods anxious to come, even in this Kali Yuga, to take advantage of the Sankirtan movement, the chanting of the holy name. The chanting of the holy name is so potent and so powerful that even a slight attention, even saying it in a derogatory manner or anyway, there's such a transcendental benefit to the chanting of the holy name that people are anxious to, higher personalities are anxious to participate in that. And this is the particular reason, the specific reason. This is the specific reason that Maharaj Brigitte didn't kill Kali, because there's the verse that says that even though there's an ocean of faults in Kali Yuga, but this, the one good quality of Kali Yuga is so potent and so glorious of the chanting of the holy name that brings that Lord Chaitanya propagated and brings one to the highest level of realization possible, returning or developing love for Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. That just by chanting with purity gradually, that's why he didn't stop Kali then. Because one might think, well, why didn't he just, and even the sages in their discourse between Sutta Goswami, they were asking, why didn't he do that? They were surprised. as a strict ruler, it would have been, you know, it seemed like it would have been appropriate for him to do that, and that was the explanation given. So, in the course of the exchange between the Dharma in the form of the bull and the earth in the shape of the cow, when Maharaj Parikshit was going back and forth with them in the previous chapter, he's going back and forth with them, please tell me who's caused this. They gave an extremely incredible answer. Dharma gave an extremely incredible answer. And ultimately, he wouldn't even identify who the perpetrator was. That even though it appears, even though I'm a little confused because there's so many different opinions of why people suffer and why suffering happens, still, I understand that someone who identifies a perpetrator suffers the same. Now that's a hard one to swallow, unless one understands the full import or tries to understand the full import of karmic activity. But then when the personality of Kali surrendered to Maharaj Parikshit as a noble leader, Maharaj Parikshit then changed he wasn't going to kill him, but so he gave him places to reside. Kali was asking, well, Kali said, Parikshit first said to him, well, you can't stay in my kingdom. Where is he going to go if the king, Maharaj Parikshit, is the ruler of the whole world? Where is he going to go? Fall off the flat earth maybe or something. But anyway, so he says, well, where am I going to go? He said, well, then you can go where there's the four regulative principles, you know, there are being broken. And where was that? There was no place in Maharaj Parikshit's kingdom at that time where there was prostitution, gambling, illicit sex, etc., etc. Meat eating, sorry. And so then there was a compromise. He made a compromise. And so what was that compromise? The compromise was that, okay, well, since there's none of those places even available, then you can go where gold is being hoarded. Because where gold is being hoarded, it's like an incubator. It's a fertile ground for lust, greed, envy, anger, and then the extensions of it. You know, lust, greed, envy, anger, and extending to gradually prostitution, illicit sex, meat eating, gambling. But at least it's a fertile ground, it's a breeding ground, and therefore one of the next verses after that statement is being made, one of the next verses says that that's why persons who are on the path of spiritual progress should be very careful to avoid places like that, where gold is being hoarded, where money is being, to avoid places like that, because it's the breeding ground for sinful activities as itself. And so we're reading this as history. Now we can see that to find a place where there is no if this scenario would happen, it would have to be in this day and age. It would have to be the opposite type of scenario. If, for example, somebody's chastised and they say, "Well, you should go, and you're going to have to go and live where there's no meat eating, no gambling, no prostitution, and no." Whatever the other one is. Thank you. No intoxication. None of that. And they're saying, well, where am I going to go? There's no place left like that. Oh, thanks. Thanks very much. Yeah. As long as there's an ashram there. Yeah. Yeah. So the consciousness is degraded to such an extent that what appeared shocking and rightfully irreligious thousands of years ago now is considered mainstream, and someone who goes against that current is considered shocking and fanatical or whatever, unusual. So if we take, so Srila Prabhupada, or the verse is saying that because Maharaj Parikshit, the powerful son of Abhimanyu, because he was such a qualified, righteous, and exemplary ruler, there was no chance of the personality of Godhead, personality of Kali to flourish. There was no chance because not only did Maharaj Parikshit restrict these activities in his kingdom, but he propagated transcendental activities of the glorification of the Lord's holy name. He propagated activities that purified the hearts of the citizens, and therefore they had no attraction for those things. So, but Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport that even though Kali was present way before this incident of Maharaj Parikshit discovering him beating the cow and bull, Kali was present, but he didn't have any influence because Maharaj Parikshit, being a strong and righteous ruler, kept the citizens engaged in transcendental, or at the very best, pious activities, so that they would continue on a progressive march for spiritual advancement. If we take this, I was thinking of this is a similar circumstance. If we take the body as the country, then we understand that the mind is the ruler. The mind is the ruler of the country of our body. And if we want our, actually the intelligence should be, but anyway, okay. If we want our senses to be controlled and act in the proper manner, then we have to be very strict, starting from our thinking, feeling, and willing. It's not that we can be lazy. It's not that we can be negligent and hear lots of material sound vibration, see lots of mundane activities, see in the sense of search out mundane activities, movies, this and that. Search out impure sound vibration. Because then the senses will never be satisfied and never be under control, and it will never be able to execute our religious duties with any sincerity, with any without much result, and without any taste. We won't have a taste for our spirit. So it filters down like that to the individual, that we also have to be righteous and powerful rulers of our mind and senses, meaning to say, of our own mind and senses. And then one by one, that effect will be there on the whole collective civilization. One by one, it'll draw, as they say, drops of water wear away the stone. One by one, that when we have developed a taste in chanting the holy name, developed a taste in speaking about Krishna, developed a taste for sharing our good fortune with others, then that will have an expansive and a very influential effect gradually on society. So we oftentimes look for the inspiration for our spiritual progress to come from an outside source, and that's well and good. There's many people that can inspire us on the path of bhakti. There's so many advanced devotees that can inspire us on the path of bhakti, but also we also have to take a personal responsibility to be the source of our own inspiration. We can't just be totally dependent and thinking it's somebody else's responsibility to inspire me. No, it's my responsibility to search out means that of my personal inspiration, develop taste for hearing, reading, chanting, develop a taste, do our best, and then Krishna will provide. Krishna is always providing. The 8th verse in Shri Upanishad, Krishna is the self-sufficient philosopher who has been fulfilling everyone's desires since time immemorial. So then, in that way, doing our best to control our mind and senses, if we control our mind and senses and therefore the desires and don't let our desires to just gush out in any form or shape or way or whatever, then that controlled or attempted control to fix our mind on the process of Krishna consciousness, Krishna will reciprocate. That's one point that I'm trying to express here. Krishna will reciprocate with that. By how? Sometimes by giving us particular service. That's one sign of a reciprocation. And sometimes he'll give us a particular association, either one-on-one or you'll hear some particularly inspiring. Now, all of that is coming by Krishna's mercy, reciprocating. Oh, you want to continue to make progress? You're making endeavor to make progress? Well, here's some nice association, here's some nice service, here's some nice opportunity, here's somebody nice to explain that philosophy to. That's his sign of reciprocation. We can see that and take those opportunities with appreciation. So, Srila Prabhupada says in the purport, as we've been mentioning, that the disturbing elements like the personality of Kali will always be trying to extend their nefarious activities, but it is the duty of the able state to check them by all means. So when people in general are checked from doing quote-unquote things that they like to do, they don't always appreciate that. So similarly, our senses also, when they get checked by not being able to engage in unnecessary things, oftentimes they want to give a little kickback, you know, the mind wants to protest a little louder or this or that. But if we're able to stick to the principles, the religious principles that we've dedicated our lives to, then gradually that background noise becomes lesser and lesser. And one develops an actual taste, the real taste. That's what we're actually hanging for, to develop that real taste. So that, and Bhagavad Gita describes very simply, very succinctly, that when one develops the higher taste, then the taste for the lower activities, it's not a struggle to give them up. You're tasting, you're experiencing, you're actually feeling a higher pleasure from doing these activities, and you actually experience a lesser, you can experience the degradation of your consciousness when you allow that to seep in. So it's not a fight. It's not a fight. It's a natural thing. Let me go to this higher activity, which I have personal experience, is actually better for me. It's hard when you don't have that personal experience, but by doing that, then you'll get that. So those are just a few thoughts. If there's some comments or questions or discussions, or Dhammaraj Prabhu, and then Jitari.
You mentioned a couple of things that I just want to share. First, you earlier in your class, you mentioned about how Srila Prabhupada are encouraging the devotees to be in devotional dress, and which is something that we're not accustomed to. Well, I hope I don't offend anyone, but coincidentally, I was just mentioning to one devotee this morning that now for Guru Puja, you know, we're hardly having devotees in devotional dress, at least not at the time when we have to start Guru Puja. So now we're kind of limited with who to ask to do RT or things like that. So even that, can affect us.
And sometimes you don't notice those slips until all of a sudden.
Well, especially when you have to organize, that's when you recognize those slips.
Yeah. Thanks for keeping the standard. Yeah.
Also, you're mentioning about finding places where these simple activities doesn't exist, how, you know, it can be a shock these days. So I had an incident back in the 90s, I was in Venezuela, and I happened to meet one person who knew a little bit of English. So we started talking, we were showing her the Back to God in magazine. And then we told her about our principles that, you know, we don't do this, this, and this. And she was totally shocked. The next thing, this was in the marketplace, by the way. And then she starts on the top of her voice announcing to everybody that, come listen to this, that here is somebody who don't eat meat, don't do this, don't do that. And look, he has a book that can tell you how to do those things.
Wow.
Next to him, within the next 20 minutes, I distributed the 200 DVDs that I had with me.
Amazing. Amazing.
And then from the next day when I would go out, she was always in the marketplace. And as soon as she'd see, she would call everybody around. And she became the book distributor for the next 6 weeks.
Wow, that's amazing.
That's wonderful.
Thanks for sharing that. Thank you. Jitari Kabu?
Thank you for the class, Nanda. many times in the Bhagavatam there are analogies. There's Paranjana and different things, and I was curious, like, with this one, that here's Kali, the personality, and then there's Dharma, the bull, and then Mother Earth in the form of cow. So this is not an analogy. This is that, you know, Maharaj Parikshit was just on his own on a horse, and then he came across the scene.
Yeah,
or
that's my understanding, that really happened. You know what I mean? It's not an analogy, but there's so many lessons that we can take from that. Is there something you'd like to correct me on?
It's in subtle form.
Subtle form.
Subtle. Okay, thank
but
you.
But that the situation with Paranjana, hold on, that situation with Paranjana and that analogy, that's also a very interesting preaching tactic, you know, because he didn't want to say, who was the king that he was talking to? Narada was talking to, not Prachinabhari, thank you. Yeah, Narada was talking to Prachinabhari, who was actually more or less the personification of Paranjana, you know. But he didn't want to say that directly to him. He said, so let me tell you a story about this other person, because it's so easy to relate to other people as opposed to who me, I'm doing something else, you know what I mean? So that's the interesting, you know, take the heat off the person and but also enables the person to listen to the moral of the story. So.
I had one other question too. You said something about the identifier also gets some kind of reaction.
According to the verse in the Bhagavatam, the person who identifies who the perpetrator of the crime is gets the same reaction as the person who committed the crime. Yeah, and I can see the quizzical look in your eye. But it's not something that can be taken lightly. It's something that we have to really understand at intricacies of crime. The point is, okay, let me go this way. The point is that Srimad Bhagavatam is always bringing to our attention, we are responsible for our own situation. We are always thinking, I'm suffering because something outside of me, because I was raised in a poor family, because my mother was this, because I got fired from my job, because that was unfair. This, you know, we're thinking that the cause of our suffering is outside of us. Srimad Bhagavatam is always pointing out to us, we are responsible. The individual living entity hasn't been forced to come into this material world, hasn't been forced to come here, wasn't forced to act in a certain way. We chose to, you know, from day one, to try to, the idea came in our mind that maybe we can be happy without serving Krishna. And Krishna very kindly facilitated that to show us that it's not really possible.
So that's the, it's deep and painful. You know, if we just take it superficially, it's painful that the perpetrator, the identifier of a sinful act is going to get this, you know, to, especially to oneself, meaning to oneself, is going to get the same, because we're missing the point, thinking, oh, it's his fault that I'm suffering. He beat me, therefore I'm suffering, and it's his fault. If he hadn't beaten me, then I wouldn't be suffering. But if I hadn't acted previously in such and such a way to get beaten, then I wouldn't be suffering. But I did it, whether it was yesterday or 3 million lives ago, I've done it. And I'm just reaping the results. Hard to get. Okay, Sita G, and then Prabhu, and we'll get around to it.
I had something else in my mind, but that's an interesting point, question and everything. And the thought that was coming to me is, you know, if we're overly identifying this person or thing did this to me, we're in the same mentality of like we think there's this doer thing going on here, and I just got the short end of the stick.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So we're in the same mentality of cause and effect as the perpetrator.
Right.
And really, you know, we're trying to pull back from all that. And the good and the bad of this world is really not what's
and
happening.
Can I just add?
Well, you're given class, you can do that. Yeah, sure.
Also, when we're thinking that we're suffering because of that external reason, and then we want to actually get back at the person or whatever, either verbally or physically, whatever, then what are we doing? Perpetuating the chain of cycle, action, react. And if something happens to us and we don't react physically or verbally, then we're just what Sita G was saying, we're blocking that, we're breaking that chain of action and reaction of repeated birth and death. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, that doesn't mean if somebody's giving you a hard time, you can't take their head off.
It doesn't mean you shouldn't do it with attachment. Yes, correct.
Yes, okay.
Yeah. There's all those
as a dharmic principle, we should do it.
Thank you.
Krishna's pleasure.
Yeah.
But,
nuances, there's always
Yeah, it's a nuance.
Okay.
But on the Maharaj Parikshit thing in the cow, Bhumi, you know, was that, what do we mean when we say it was a subtle thing? I mean, I understand there's subtler forms of material energy that we don't have standard access to in our current forms, but where does it say that was on a subtle, like it wasn't happening in three, maybe it was on a subtle form, but where does it, where do we get the reference it was on some subtle form?
Huh?
What's that? What did he say specifically? Huh?
Do you
want to
speak into the mic, please?
Yeah, is there a specific reference that said that was on a subtle plane that wasn't on the earth, you know?
I'm saying Vishwanath Chakruti Thakur gives that when Parikshit Maharaj was traveling, he came to a point where he was hearing all the glories of Pandavas and Krishna's relationship. He was very joyful. But then he had a spy. And Prabhupada also actually mentioned that. He had a spy who actually reported the emperor that what's going on, that Kali is intervening here, there, a little bit. And then he got very disturbed. He took the sword and he went out with his horses. And that's why he came near the Jambudip junction where he saw this scenery taking place. And then he, the discussion started. That's why it is. There's a long, I can send it to you. Vishwanath Chakruti Thakur, anybody can find it. It's already in English now.
I just don't understand what
makes that subtle. Subtle form, like a movie you see, it existed, but not a public is not like witnessing what's going on.
This
discussion is just him seeing the whole scenery going on.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Dr. King.
I was going to say, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, recently I was reading an article from Bhakti Vikas Maharaj's book, and he says, we are product of our own decision.
Product
means where you are, who you are, your own decision, previous life, where you brought it. And then he says that all the suffering in this world are in three categories. One is, he says, birth, death, old age, disease. Prabhupada also talks this so much. He said, this is inevitable. And nothing you can do about it. You know, but it's like a predestined. And then he says, second is result of your prarabdha karma, that at certain time, certain thing will take place in your life. Yes, you can pray and minimize this by the help of superior authority, Krishna, or you know, astrology, or medicine, all kinds of things. And the third one, he said, this is where the devotees are applying, that when things are happening in life, how you see it and how you react, it's 100% up to you. And this is the biggest causes of suffering, not predestined, whatever it is, but how people are reacting, their attitude, their character is what the biggest cause of suffering. I thought it was very interesting.
Yes, thanks for that. You want to pass the mic back to Don Raj and then back? So many people. Thank you.
Thank you for a very nice class.
Thank you.
With regards to the Shastras giving us a perspective of where we are at and how we can elevate ourselves, there's also the aspect of Guru Parampara, which is Krishna's energy injected into the material energy to express how the Shastras are to be applied in our lives. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this is for us to get a perspective of where we're at and how to elevate ourselves. Here's an example, physical example, Guru, who's showing us how to exemplify our own lives. So we have to discriminate, and therefore we have to observe that which is going on around us, which is impractical for spiritual life, and how to avoid those things, and how to elevate our own lives. But we also have to give guidance to those that, you know, share our understanding with others. And so, by observing others and seeing those flaws, you're saying we're implicated in that behavior that we're observing. I'm not understanding how that isn't overcome by the guru impetus to elevate ourselves. Inspired to elevate ourselves and others. And so we point out flaws and try to assist others. So is that the process by which we burn up that karma?
If I'm understanding what you're asking correctly, pointing out flaws in somebody is different than saying who's doing some particular action against me. And what I would consider the intention, what I understand that you're trying to say is the intention of if you're in a situation where you're trying to see the flaws in somebody, if our intention is just that, to point out the flaw so that for some subtle gratification that you're less and I'm better, then that's an implication of, you know, things. But if someone has an intention of trying to help somebody, then that's different than trying to point out he did this or that person did this because of that reason I'm suffering. It's a little different in my opinion.
Thank you. That gives it a lot of clarity. Thank you.
Only because you're able to pull out the clarity from the mixture of mud and water. Thanks.
Yeah, that's described as envious criticism and constructive criticism,
thank
just
you.
To put it in words.
Yes.
That with that statement, I personally have a huge problem with that, in that I think it requires like detailed explanation and to understand the circumstance of those statements and to understand the intricacies. Like, for example, that statement can be applied if, let's put it quote-unquote, one is an ordinary person. But if one is a leader, they have the responsibility to correct the situation or identify the perpetrator and do something about it.
Correct.
So, therefore, from the aspect of a manager, then that reaction would not necessarily be there because they have a higher duty to perform. Just like, for example, with a soldier on the streets, even verbally insult somebody, they can be punished. But if they're in the army, and the more they kill is the more recognition they get. So, you know, depends on that situation, which I see that it needs that you know, real detailed explanation to understand this
yeah.
topic, which,
yeah.
because other than that, we can say, well, we shouldn't point out any faults, you know, we shouldn't, because we're going to end up in the reaction. If any management has that mentality, the whole thing would be ruined before you know it. Also, when you were talking about, pointing out faults in others, that others are the cause of my faults, I was just showing my finger that when Dr. Siddhanta Maharaj says one as against three. But I have a question. You talked, Maharaj Parikshit, you didn't discuss it here, but it's there in this section of verses. Maharaj Parikshit was indicating that as soon as Lord Krishna left, that's when Kali manifested and, immediately. But also he says that Duryodhan was depersonified, or Kali manifested also. So do you know anything about that? Can you explain?
Well,
not when Krishna was there.
Well, the very first sentence, Srila Prabhupada says, in this purport he says, as we have already explained, the personality of Kali had entered into the jurisdiction of this earth long ago. Even at that time, long before Maharaj Parikshit saw the incident with the cow and the bull.
Okay.
And he was looking for an opportunity to spread his influence, but he could not do so satisfactorily because of the presence of a strong government. So Kali had, as far as the time and exactly when, he had entered long ago, but he wasn't able to, it took time, the degradation of the time factor for him to have enough influence to even do something like this. That's how I can answer your question.
Yes, okay. You just explained the difference between being present and being able to manifest.
Being present and what?
And being able to manifest.
Yes, yes. Right, so correct,
He was present, but he was
present.
Able to
he was there, around, but manifested, and it started to manifest.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Any other comments from the other side of the room? Quiet side of the room today?
Quiet.
Okay. Oh, here we have maybe the reference.
This is
from Saratha Darshini. This is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comments. From 116. First canto, 16th verse. The moment, and this is again Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's, the moment that Kali Yuga had started Dharma, the moment that Kali Yuga had started Dharma, the earth and Kali appeared in this situation. Okay, I'm going to read it again with the proper pauses. The moment that Kali Yuga had started Dharma, the earth and Kali appeared in this situation. Okay? So this was not seen by the people, Parikshit, who meditated with a desire to see this, it with his mystic eye. Dharma, in the form of a bull, asked questions to the cow who had lost her effulgence. This is Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. The whole thing is, he got from the first canto to the tenth canto, it's all. He meditated, he saw that with his mystic eye.
That's the English translation.
Yeah.
You know, there's different realms of that's now, there's all kinds of different things going on with material energy and our sense stuff.
It's like a spooky.
You know better than me, mystic eye, what is that?
Yeah, you know, yeah. But that's. Hold on.
I mean, you know, we have some more subtle senses that we open up.
Yeah. Thank you very kindly. Oh, yes. We have one more little comment here, or a very big comment.
All right.
Just reiterating some of the points, but about discrimination, that we need to have discrimination between right and good and bad, and yeah, just in our own lives, and especially like Prabhu was saying, leaders need to check for the protection of other devotees and society, but like not in a vindictive mood. That's what I would.
Vindictive?
Yeah, yeah. Not in the, like, you know, trying to smash, you know. But yeah, for the good of everyone, and but seen from a transcendental platform. So if someone's on that level, they're not doing it with the selfish motivation, you know, like you said, bad intention.
Bad intention, materially motivated. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that summary. Very nice. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Bhagavatam ki jai, Gopri Mandi, Hari Hari Bol.
Thank you. That was a nice class.